welcome back to the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff, and we have a sponsor this hour, Team Power. They're our local John Deere Kubota tractor dealer. They're up on Twin View Boulevard, 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. And everything tractors. If you need it fixed, you need to buy one, sell one, whatever it may be, Team Power's your one-stop shop. Their phone number is 226-9226, or you can reach them on the web at readingtractors.com.
And all the best tractors are either green or orange.
That's right.
Those are the only colors tractors
that's
should be, is green
one
or
number
orange.
Two brand in the,
so that's
in,
like
in
the bottom
America.
Line there. We need to get that
yeah.
a
and
bottom
American
line.
American made, believe it or not. People don't think they're made in
I
America.
I know. They but, all think they're made in Japan, but they're
no,
not.
No,
just
they're
the
not.
Engines.
Yeah, that's right. Okay.
Shop American.
Yep.
Okay, so we're back to our, this is going so fast. It's going faster than I wanted. But today the disclaimer is probably good because we'll take total credit for the show. We don't want anybody else to get blamed, but enough's enough.
You know, the pink hats, the Me Too, the women never lie. That if somebody accuses somebody, they're guilty until, well...
Guilty until proven innocent.
They're just guilty. Yeah. They don't ever get proven innocent. They're just guilty.
Yeah, if you can't prove
you
your innocence,
the finger,
obviously you're guilty.
I should have called this show Salem Witch Trials 2.0, but instead I named it False Allegations of Child Molestation. It got longer, actually. False Allegations of Child Molestation, Sexual Misconduct, and Prison Reform in the Age of the Vagenda with our author, Chris Enns, who is a private investigator. You never get tired of it.
You're such a word smite.
I smited it into the title there.
Very good. Very good.
So please share far and wide. And, you know, for all those people who are just frustrated with this whole thing, and I got to tell you, I am shocked at how many men are not frustrated by it. They're somehow jumping on the bandwagon. I don't know if they're trying to, I don't know, it's like some weird Stockholm syndrome. Maybe if we side with them, they won't attack us.
Well, they've never been
boys.
Accused, or they've probably not had contact with somebody who has been accused falsely. And I tell you what, that's a bad thing.
We live in a country that is based on the rule of law, and the rule of law says you have to have proof. But Chris's story about her brother is all about how you don't have proof. If you missed the first hour, please go to wethepeopleradio.us and we'll have an archive up there right after the show, and it'll be commercial free by later on.
And just the fact that you have to cop a plea on something like this to prevent the full force of the law coming down on you because you can't prove your innocence.
That's evil.
That is wrong.
So, hey, Chris, let's go back to that. Oh, and by the way, we're just dying to do a show on all your Western books and find out about...
Oh, my gosh, how much fun would that be? Because... You know, you mentioned Annie Oakley at the very beginning of this, and I don't want to go off on a rabbit trail here, but, you know, Annie Oakley, we know so much about her being with the Buffalo Bill Cody show that we completely miss the fact that she spent 6 years of her life fighting William Randolph Hearst in court for defamation of character. The book that I wrote called The Trials of Annie Oakley is about that particular area of her life.
And she won that, didn't she?
She sued, he owned 55 newspapers in the early 1900s when this happened. She sued all 55. She won 54 of the 55 cases.
Dang.
She won as little as 10 cents and as much as $1,000. She lost money on the deal.
Wow.
The 55th newspaper, they did retract the statement, and the editor that retracted the statement was fired. But
There's just so much... great information. So it's kind of like today we're talking about the evil side of women and girls and what can go wrong there. But we have a rich history in America with some of our women from the West, and I'd love to do a program about that.
And it's amazing since I have three brothers. And my brothers, I became also the president of a father's rights organization, too. And, I have had my car keyed by women. I've been shot at by women. You know, women that have told me, listen, we have taken a back seat to men for so many years, and if this is the one way that we can get ahead, why don't you let us get ahead with this?
Wow, but, lying. That's so honorable.
I absolutely believe that if you accuse somebody of a crime, you should have to back it up with something. And when my brother was fighting for his life and fighting for his credibility and his background and his integrity, and he would get passionate about that, much in the way that Kavanaugh got passionate about it when he was in the hearings. And people would say, who was he? He got too mad, and why is he getting so mad at this? He shouldn't get so mad at this. I think he's lying because he got mad at
Yeah.
him.
Can you
You're
imagine?
Fighting for your life.
Fighting for your whole reputation, your life, and your future. Getting mad is just the beginning.
I mean, you read everything about this guy's life, and this comes out of nowhere. I mean, guys like Harvey Weinstein or whatever, I mean, they scratched the surface on that, and, you know, all the garbage came flooding out. That was, I mean, a veritable tsunami of information. But this particular situation, it's like everybody goes, wait a minute, he was actually a really nice guy. And then he drank beer. That killed me. I was talking to somebody who said, well, you know, he drank beer in high school. And I said, okay, well, let's look around, because probably most everyone within vision, you know, the scope of our vision here, drank beer in high school. Does that make us all criminals? I mean,
yeah,
that's stupid.
It's amazing the level. Conversely, you can see that women are guilty of so many horrible things like that what they were accusing Kavanaugh of, but it's not looked at in the same way.
No.
Let me give you an example. This past week, Neil Patrick Harris, the actor, was on The View with Whoopi Goldberg. He
painful.
Reminded her during this particular conversation that they were having that he was a 15-year-old gentleman who was on one of his very first films with Whoopi Goldberg. And during the filming of this, Whoopi Goldberg, who was in her 40s at the time, goes over to Neil Patrick Harris and says, in 10 years' time, you and I are going to have sex.
Ew. On now, every level.
Now, you know, the character's notwithstanding. Oh. She's 40, he's 15. Let's
yeah.
flip that around.
And
yeah.
he reminded her that she said
he
that?
He reminded her of that, and she said,
how'd that work
yeah,
out?
I might have said that. And she said, you know, that was back in a day when you can joke around like that and that'd be okay.
Oh,
well, that's
not
only
for,
okay
because
it's a woman saying that to a 15-year-old. But let's flip that around.
Yeah.
Let's say you're Harvey Weinstein and you make that comment to a 15-year-old girl on a film.
Doomed.
Somehow that changes things, doesn't it? And I'm saying it shouldn't change things.
Right.
Yeah.
It's wrong no matter who you are.
And I'm outraged that we don't have, that there is that double standard. But there is that double standard. I mean, how many 20-something teachers do you hear that are women that have been having affairs with their 16-year-old
yeah,
students?
Yeah, kind of bunches of them.
And you get, like, high signs, like, good for that kid, good for her, you know? If you flip that around,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
There's something smarmy about it. But when a woman does it, it's, you know, you want to celebrate the teenagers.
It could be love,
yeah.
Right? It could be love. They talk about that. Well, they were so in love.
And
really?
I'm just saying, I am as a female, I am outraged that we don't see that as taking advantage of somebody, and all they get is a smack on the wrist. I am outraged that more men, as you said, Aaron, more men are not upset about this. But I think
they're afraid.
And I cannot tell you how many, you know, probably after this broadcast, and people go on my internet site, which I don't care if they do. I want them to go on and read the plea and read what happened to my brother and know that this is so widespread. It's amazing.
Yeah.
I want them to be able to see that. But I know that I will get scores of hate emails from women.
Well, let's make sure that we get all the hate email, because I have this super song I found this morning at like 3 o'clock by John Michael Montgomery called Sold. And it was in 1995 we had a song like this, and I only took out a little piece, but kind of a catchy little tune. You got to listen to the words, though. We'll be right back with our guest, Chris Enns. You're listening to We the People. Join us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Well, I went down to the Grundy County Auction, where I saw something I just had to have. My mind told me I should proceed with caution, but my heart said, go ahead and make a bid on that. And
I said, hey, pretty lady, won't you give me a sign? I'd give anything to make you my own mind. I'll be your bidding and be at your beck and call. Yeah, I've never seen anyone looking so fine. Man, I gotta have her, she's a one of a kind. I'm going once, going twice. I'm sold on the lady in the second row. She's an 8, she's a 9, she's a 10, I know. She's got ruby red lips, blonde hair, blue eyes. And I'm about to bid my heart goodbye.
I was born in the wagon of a traveling show. My mama had to dance for the money they throw. Papa would do whatever he could, preach a little gospel, sell a couple bottles of Dr. Good. Gypsies, tramps, and thieves would hear it from the people of the town. They call it gypsies, tramps, and thieves. But every night all the men would come around and lay their money down.
There we go. Got it out of our system there. I knew you'd like sold, though. I wish I should have done it opposite so we could hear you laughing. Can you believe that was... I mean, if somebody tried to release a song like that now...
It's just amazing. Isn't it? I mean, we've changed so much and everything. And that's the other part of this that I think is amazing. When it comes to sexual misconduct, there are some things that men do that is not necessarily litigious. It warrants a kick in the groin, and that's it.
Yeah, sure.
Everything is not a matter of taking to court. But everything is viewed as the things that they view as sexual misconduct. You think that is it? There's nothing.
Well, one thing it does is it truly diminishes the bad acts that need to be highlighted and
prosecuted.
Yeah. Because, you know, on a serious note, I look at what this portends going forward for women. I guess I'm thinking young women mostly, but they present a clear and present danger for a business owner at this point. Because they're being raised in and really schooled in how to turn everything into a sex crime, and wouldn't be surprised if it became difficult to find work depending on the line of work you're in.
You know,
people just don't want to deal with it.
Many of the cases that I get too come from human relations places where they have been bombarded with calls saying, you know, from women who didn't get a promotion, and then, you know, they're upset about it.
Yep.
And, you know, therefore, now I'm going to come forward and say this guy touched me inappropriately.
Right.
Well, I can think of a case where this gal wasn't doing her job, and she was doing a terrible job. And a new manager came in and started to document her work. And it was like, you know, you're going to do your job or you'll find another one. And so she turns around and cries sexual harassment. And that guy gets fired, ruins his life. He winds up basically couch surfing in middle age, and his reputation is destroyed.
Sure.
He didn't do anything.
No one's gonna hire him with that in his background.
So in comes the next guy. As soon as he begins to actually act like the manager, there's another, you know, psst, how about sexual harassment? And then that guy leaves. I think we're on, we went through two or three people. And then, I mean, what does the business have to do at that point? Well, let's promote her. Let's not have any men be her boss. And
right.
that way we've solved the problem. And I'm thinking, wow, that's not what women should be wanting.
It isn't what they should be wanting, but I believe that is.
I don't see that as justice or a good trend or any of that.
That's what we're doing. I mean, a few years ago, I volunteered with a organization here in Nevada County called the Friendship Club, and I was supposed to be mentoring a young woman writing a story. She was 13 years old. I picked her up to take her to the library to do some research on this so we could begin doing the preliminary work for the story. En route, she informed me that her science teacher was giving her a lot of pop quizzes, and if he didn't stop, she was going to accuse him of molestation.
Holy cow.
Wow.
I turned around and took her home, and I immediately stopped doing any work with that organization. Kids are smart. They know exactly what to do. They know the system now. This is what we've bred.
Yeah. Well, I think the precursor to this was child abuse. And I mean, we all know there's child abuse. I mean, there's real child abuse. But when we were kids, if your parents grounded you, well, mine didn't. My dad was, you know, one quick, you know, shot to the rear, and that was the end of that. You know, just spanked you. And it wasn't, you know, you didn't limp for a week or anything like that. I mean, it was just your basic, out came Mr. Hand, you know, and everybody got an attitude adjustment. But that stopped when we were really little because we figured out who was in charge of things. My dad didn't take advantage of that or, I don't know, you know, wait till your father gets home. Remember that? That was actually something people said. And, you know, we drank out of hoses and, you know, all those things.
Right.
And most of that turned out okay. We had some respect for authority. I mean, we knew we shouldn't run from the police or pull guns on them. I mean, we learned those things at home. But now, if your parents look at you sideways or don't give you enough dessert, you can call CPS. Can you imagine if we would have done that as kids? Called CPS on her parents. Not that we ever knew there was CPS, but...
You know, and I just am fearful of the society that we're creating with all of this and what women are walking away learning to do. I mean, and before I go off and say, you know, first of all, I love to write about women of the West because there isn't any woman that ever said, I'm going West because I'm a woman.
Good one. They didn't sit there and wait for somebody to do it for them either.
Yeah, the fact that they were a woman wasn't anything that they brought up and said that they could or couldn't do because they were women. That was not the case. I just finished a book about, it's called No Place for Women, and it's about women fighting for their right to vote. But even the way that they did that was done in a very dignified manner in which women realized the effect that they were having on the world as a whole and how they wanted to set their place in history. And that was something to be respected. There's nothing to be respected when you falsely accuse somebody of a crime and you can get away with it. One of the things I wanted to touch on with regards to my brother was out of his family home for more than 75 days, and the FBI went in to do the investigation, and my ex-sister-in-law had all the computers, everything, all of these disks, all of this compiled in the living room waiting for the FBI, and that they took as evidence against my brother. I mean, I can throw anything. They didn't come in and do an investigation of the home. She pulled everything together.
Oh, and wow.
That's not how it's supposed to be done either.
No.
That all of that is completely inappropriate. It could have been anything. It could have been a neighbor's. It could have been anybody's.
But once the finger is pointed at you and you're clipped as a, you know, for child molesting, I would imagine help is pretty, I mean, assistance, I should say, is pretty unavailable. I mean, nobody wants to be the one who got the child molester off the, you know, out of the charge. I mean, once you're accused, you're kind of stuck, I would think.
Chris, I'm kind of curious. When your brother was going through all of this, did any of his friends or brothers on the force, did any of them step up? And
they did. They did. I have numerous letters from all of them that stepped up and said, There isn't any way that this is possible. We know the character of this man, but a weeping teenager trumps all of that.
Yeah.
And that's a sad, sorry fact, but it is the true statement.
And, you know, you had said that she recanted, what, three times?
Three times.
It's interesting, and I had told you about this on our phone call, but I guess I should include it here. I received a phone call from a lady who wanted help getting her husband out of an additional sentence as a wife abuser, you know, a domestic violence deal. And it turned, and it, so I started asking questions, and the whole thing didn't really make sense to me. Well, you know, he didn't do it. And I said, well, if he didn't do it, why is he in jail? I don't understand that. And she said, well, I was mad at him. And so I went to the police department and I told them that he was beating me. And they came and arrested him, and I was just doing it to pay him back. It's like, okay, that was a great idea to start with. And I said, okay. And she said, but I went in and I told him he wasn't doing it. Now, here's like the evil twist of the thing. She goes back in and said, look, I really don't want him prosecuted. I was just doing it to teach him a lesson because I was mad at him. I mean, kind of a, I don't know who thinks up these things, but the police said, it's okay. We're not going to let him out. He can't get to you again. You don't have to change your story. We'll protect you.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, no, no, you're not protecting me. I was lying. I mean, she was real clear about it. Right. I was lying. No, no, we know you're only doing that so that he doesn't come after you. So we're going to make sure that we throw the book at him. She's like, no, don't throw the book at him. I was lying. She could never convince them that she was lying and they were going to help her. So her taking back the story, like,
well,
never counted for anything.
And you know, the other thing about this is you will
weird.
Never get a prosecutor to say, I made a mistake. They will fight tooth
that.
And nail to twist the facts because they are not going to go back on it. They just won't.
No.
And you, the other thing about this is many people who are involved in these situations take pleas because they don't have any more money to fight it. The government has an endless amount of money, or so they think. They don't really. But they have a lot more money than the average person.
Well, and then when they presented, the options for your brother were take a plea or and do how many years?
20. The plea was 20.
If he didn't, every hour he didn't take the plea was another
year.
Another year.
My God. So how does that work? And then just recently I had applied for compassionate release because he has been in the federal system now for 16 years with Parkinson's disease. His health has substantially deteriorated. He is now walking with a walker. His eyesight has deteriorated, which is what prompted my phone call to Congressman LaMalfa about the situation because my husband and I pay $250 a month for his health care, which he doesn't get the health care.
Yeah.
A lot of people say, wait a second, he's in federal prison. That's a government-run organization. Why are you paying for it?
Yeah, we need to get to the third part of what we promised because we talked about false allegations, sexual misconduct. Now we got to get to this prison reform thing. Let's take a really quick break. And when we come back, I'd like for you to tell people what you've learned about that because it was really illuminating. We'll be right back with our guest, Chris Enns. You are listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Got a black magic woman. Got a black magic woman. I've got a black magic woman. Got me so blind I can't see. That she's a black magic woman. She's trying to make a devil out of me.
We're back.
And I've not exhausted all the songs. I've got two left. And you know what? We had to play some fun music. And the one thing I didn't tell people about your bio is not only are you an award-winning screenwriter, you've written for television, short subject, and feature films, but you've also written stuff for stand-up comedians.
Well, yeah, years ago I was a stand-up comedian. I made my way through college doing stand-up comedy and
I was
blessed to be able to open one time for Phyllis Diller and then another time for George Burns, which people are like, who the heck are those people? But
no,
I mean, way back when.
Real actual comedians.
They're
gold standard comedians.
Wonderful to be around those people. And so that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to go into comedy, which I thought would be a wonderful thing to do, but comedy is so incredibly subjective. I mean, I could walk into a room and do 5 minutes of shtick and not everybody would laugh, but if I walk into a room and tell somebody about what happened to Annie Oakley, people might be riveted, you know. So
right.
I did a shift with all of that. And then, you know, I feel like I used to be a lot more funny than I have
been. I was just going to say, and then your fun sort of got shot out from under you.
Isn't that amazing? You just feel such a character change because of everything. And a real sad, very cynical view of the way things run now. Like I said, with regards to the prison, and I know that I am not alone in knowing this. If you've got a loved one in federal prison, the treatment that that loved one gets going in to see the loved one that's in prison, the treatment that you get from the prison as a whole, from somebody that if you've not even done anything. I mean, the people on the outside are going in to see their loved ones, and they're treated like dirt.
Right.
And does it matter what offense the person in there committed? I mean, do you get the feeling that it has anything to do with that, or is it just general?
I don't think it has anything to do with
okay.
that. I mean, and I have been with my brother in federal prisons from Leavenworth all the way out to Terminal Island in Long Beach, and the treatment is horrific. You know, when we were at Long Beach, you had the visitation room, and you have four walls. One of them faces out, and you get to look at a window. But when the guards set up for the people's family to come in and see the inmates, they make sure that all those chairs have faced the wall.
Oh, really?
And you sit in there for sometimes 3 hours before they even begin to process your paperwork to get in to see your loved one.
Wow.
They will cram as many as 120 people in this one room, and they won't let you stand in the doorway to even hear them say your name when it's your turn to get in. And they take great delight in that kind of thing. In Terminal Island, when you get in to see a loved one, you are in lockdown a couple of times yourself, and one of those lockdown areas looks like a dog run, what you would see at a Greyhound racing track. You're locked down in these individual things, and then the guards wait until that moment where they want to flip the switch and let you out. I was in there one day with my mother and several other women who were in there to see their children, and the gentlemen were talking about that they have several seagulls on top of their prison, and that there are two ways to get rid of those seagulls. First, you can either beat them to death with a tennis racket, or you can lure them off of the roof with a rice cake. They let us know, waiting in line, that that's how they deem to treat the prisoners inside. They'll either beat them with a tennis racket, or they will entice them with some other way.
Wow.
Now, it's a horrible thing to hear as a loved one.
Yeah.
When you're waiting, you shouldn't hear that. That shouldn't be something that the guards do, but they do. The other thing that's staggering is you think that the inmates inside get vegetables and fruit, and they do not. I just know in the facilities that I've been in, the current one where my brother's at, the fruit and the vegetables are stolen. The fruit and the vegetables rarely, if ever, make it to the inmate. So when
they're stolen by employees?
I can't say for sure who they're stolen by. It would be, all I know is it doesn't filter down to the inmates.
Wow.
And so when the families come to see the inmate, the first thing that they want their families to do is go over to the vending machines and get them orange juice or whatever vegetables are in the machine, because they don't get that.
Wow.
Now, prison will tell you that's not true. But the people who are there, who have loved ones inside, they know. And those are the people who should be talked to. And they're not.
We've gotten into, you know, we're so frustrated, especially in the, you know, state of California, where, you know, we've created all these crazy laws that let people out of prison early and all that. I think a lot of the thought process that people are getting is that prisoners have it better than, you know, I've heard people say, you know, better than our veterans. They get better medical care. They get to watch TV all the time. They get better food.
You know, and I've heard that too, and I don't even know where people are getting that. I hear that all the time. Oh, they get to play ping pong. They get to, I don't know where that's happening.
Well,
I
mean, it comes from people that don't know, and
right.
it's just rumor mill.
Well, it makes people mad, so it's retold.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because I can tell you that that is not true. I mean, you have a TV room in a prison situation that you get to watch, but you only get to watch the programs that the gangs have on. If you are somebody like my brother who has Parkinson's disease, you don't get to be in the TV room because
right.
all those seats are already taken. You can't just come in there and turn on the TV and watch whatever you want. I mean, it's just blatant misnomers.
Well, let's face it. I don't care how big the TV is and how many channels you get. Prison's got to be the worst place in the world to try to survive. I mean, I just can't imagine being locked up like that. Nothing would make it
well, especially for something that you didn't do that you wound up
yeah.
having to agree to. And he's former law enforcement and labeled a child molester,
right.
So I'm not really sure how you get in a worse position.
And I'm not saying, oh, prison's got to be a piece of cake. It should be that way. I'm not saying that at all. I'm not
right.
trying to imply that at any circumstance. But I will tell you, I was just visiting my brother a month ago. And I wore the same outfit that I have worn the last 16 times that I went in to visit him. And I've been able to get in to visit him. It was the same pair of jeans, the same sweater, the same shoes, the same sneakers, everything. This time when I went in to see him, they said, you're not getting in here wearing those clothes. And I said, I don't understand. I've worn them the last 16 times. The guy said, I don't care. Today, you're not getting in here with that.
Really?
Had to leave, go to Walmart, purchase new clothes. By that time, they said, you got out of line, so you don't get to get in right now.
Now, how far do you have to drive to go see him?
It was more than an eight-hour drive.
Why would it matter what clothes you're wearing?
Well, I mean, one sense I understand. You shouldn't be wearing, they don't want you to wear any shorts so your legs show. They don't want you to wear any heels. You know, there's certain things. But, I mean, I'm wearing the same pair of jeans, same sneakers. No hose, same sweater, no jewelry, but it's because they can do that.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, it was egregious the way they treated me, but the gentleman who I was watching, I mean, there was a gentleman that was in his 80s. He came in with a walker. He couldn't walk without his walker. He had osteoporosis. They made him push his walker through the metal detector. It passed. He can't walk without it. I mean, his daughter was holding him while he was standing there pushing his walker through the metal detector. Then he went to walk through the walker, to the metal detector, reached out for his walker, and they said, you can't touch it. That poor man had to crawl through the metal detector. Crawl on his hands and knees.
Wow. To visit somebody in prison.
That is wrong. But you can't say anything. First of all, none of these guards that are working there, checking people in, checking family members in, wear badges. So you don't know what their names are. So even if you want to make a complaint, you don't know what their names are because they say they're doing that to protect them. So there's nothing that you can do. And if you say anything about it, they'll tell you, you will never get in here to see your loved one again. Or they'll take it out on your loved one.
Right.
Have them beaten.
Yeah.
Or have them moved. You are at their mercy. And I have seen some horrible things go on. And people think that, like I said, with the health care, my husband and I pay $250 a month for my brother's health care, which he never has gotten that health care. My brother has Parkinson's disease. His tremors are so bad. He can't keep his arms and his legs from shaking or his head.
So how does he feed himself?
Well, it's difficult. As a matter of fact, it wasn't too long ago he said that the guys were joking at the prison that they found a job for him in maintenance shaking the paint.
Nice.
Now, I mean, that's just a playful little joke. I don't think anybody meant any harm with it. But if the inmates notice that and can see it.
Yeah, he's a victim.
They will not give him any medicine for it, and they insist. And there's only so much you can do. I mean, I can get on the internet for the Federal Bureau of Prisons and voice a concern that he'll be beaten and moved again. And when somebody has Parkinson's, you are sent through a whole system where you are in a transfer station. And if you're in a transfer station with Parkinson's, former police officer charged with what he's charged with, you go in the SHU, which is solitary confinement, and you could be anywhere from 42 to 65 days while they get you to where you're going to go.
Well, and you had said that if he tries to, like, carry a tray with food on it and it all spills on the floor.
That's correct.
It's like, tough luck. There's your food.
That's it. And he's in the medical wing. And if you get through if you are in the medical wing, you're one of the last people in the chow line. And when you get through the chow line, if there's no food left, that is too bad. So I know everybody says, oh, they get three squares, three cots, and a three hots and a cot. That's not true either.
Wow.
Not true. And whereas I don't have any problem with either Kanye West or Kim Kardashian being at the White House speaking on prison reform, I feel as though I would like to be at the White House talking with President Trump about that. I've been in the system. I've seen it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this is a view that people don't get, and this isn't like the ACLU view where they think everybody needs to, you know, be coddled. These things would be considered cruel and unusual if we were doing that. We don't do this to, you know, prisoners of war or anything like that. I mean, we're pretty good with people, and it sounds like that's not happening in our system.
You know what, Aaron? I can't even say that now. I mean, if it's in the United States,
yeah, who knows?
You can throw out anything that you ever thought that the way things were handled. I never imagined that either. I mean, my husband and I have. Years ago, when my brother first went in, he was beaten and raped, and they beat his teeth out, and his glasses were broken. They wouldn't get him glasses. We were lucky enough to be able to find a doctor who let us get those glasses. We got glasses from a mall, and we had to just guess on astigmatism.
Lovely.
To get him glasses. Now, that shouldn't be the case,
no.
But I'm telling
no.
you.
No, and this all stems from a false allegation that was recanted. I mean, we should really make a point of that. We've got to take one last quick break. I've got two more Bad Women songs for our show with Chris Enns. We'll be right back.
Well, did she make you cry, make you break down, shatter your illusions of love? And is it over?
Fitting. Hey, okay, so we had questions on the break. He's in the federal prison system, not the state prison system, so we should make that distinction. And then how many federal prisons has he been in? That's one thing we want to know. And where was this crime supposedly committed? Was it in California?
No, it was in Missouri. It was Carroll County, Missouri.
Okay. So he got swept up in Carroll County, Missouri, and then he wound up in how many federal prisons?
Five.
A lot.
Five, six.
Wow.
Yikes.
So why do they move him?
You tell me. I don't know. I have no idea. I mean, he was in a medical facility in Terminal Island where he was getting moderate treatment. Now he's in a place that has one doctor there from India and gets no treatment.
Mm.
So if you didn't, okay, I guess I have a split question. If you didn't pay for medical care, what would he get? And the fact that you pay for it, what does that actually do? I mean, it sounds like it's not doing anything.
It isn't doing anything, but I don't want to run the risk of not paying it in case something bad does happen to him.
Well, sure. I get that. And if you didn't pay for his medical care, what would he receive? I mean, I'm sure there are people that are in there that are perfectly fine.
That's correct. But he's always been in a medical unit because he does have Parkinson's. Now, I know at one time he was with people who didn't have anybody in their lives, and they didn't even have extra blankets. And so my brother, one of his ministries there was he would go around and he would help cover up some of these men who had terrible arthritis and couldn't even pull the covers up around their neck. So that's kind of the things that he would do before his Parkinson's got so bad. I mean, people just suffer. I'd hate to think of what they do. I mean, I've just been so focused on what goes on with my brother, and that's just it. You do your own time. So trying to find out what happens with somebody else, you don't get the pleasure of really knowing that.
Sure. When does this potentially end?
August 2022, if he lives.
It's a long haul.
You know, that's one of the things that I'm hoping with this broadcast and helping with my conversation with you is whether or not what kind of help there could be with possibly getting in to see either my representative in person to tell him about this or to be able to get into the White House and talk about that. I mean, I am not Instagramming myself in a bikini, so I don't know that I'd get into Trump's office as Kim Kardashian in that way.
I keep telling Bill to stop doing it, but he keeps trying.
but I do want to have my voice heard and would like to know where I go from here. I mean, being able to help my brother as a private investigator, I mean, at some point that was, there's nothing I can do about that now. I've done everything I could to help him, and my goal is to be able to help other men who are being accused of such things to find their way through the system, and this is what you do and how you make it work.
What would you advise? I mean, we kind of skipped over that part. So people that you meet now, if you met someone who was, okay, so let's pretend you have all this information and now your brother's accused and you already know all of these things. What would you advise him now?
I would advise him to fight it and go all the way. I would not advise him to take a plea. That is, they want you to take a plea, so they don't have to do any of the hard work. If we had gone to court, if we had had a better attorney, and that's the other thing, you've got to screen and make sure that you've got good attorneys. And if you don't have a good attorney, you have a good private investigator who can put this information together to be able to help you with the fight.
But you had said that the statistic now is 97% are convicted?
Right.
Now, is that convicted because they went to trial or convicted because they took a plea?
They took a plea.
So of the people who go to trial, what's their success rate these days? Low and going lower?
Well, no, I'm sorry. The people that go to trial, there's a 97% conviction rate.
Right, but I mean, are they part of that whole statistic?
Yeah, they are.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's kind of hard to tell, like, who pleads out and then who actually goes
that is
and
correct.
Tries to defend themselves.
Right, and most people aren't going to tell you. I mean, when you go to look it up, unless you talk to each one of those individually, you're not going to be able to go to the prosecuting defender's office and say, I want you to pull. As a matter of fact, if you even call the prosecuting defender's office and say, how many people last year were falsely accused of child molestation, they would say, we have no way of knowing, which is not true. But you have to do all that individual legwork yourself.
Sure.
And the reason I think a lot of people plead out is they don't have the money to fight it.
That's right. If you don't have the money to fight it, as many of these people that I represent don't, they end up taking a plea. But if you are accused of child molestation and you take a plea for that, thinking that I'm not going to have to do anything other than register, you are sorely mistaken. Because what happens is you are mandated by the court to take a number of courses that you have to pay yourself. You have to go into, you have to do group counseling, individual therapy sessions, and you have to take a lie detector test every other month that you have to pay for, and that could be anywhere from $150 to $300.
Wow.
And each one of those individual sessions that you have to take, that's $150. It's $150 for the group sessions that you have to take. Hmm. So
besides the lifetime of stigma, the prison term where all sorts of horrible things will happen to you, if you live through that, then, I mean, you really pretty much can't ever fit back into society because you won't be allowed to because now you're branded as a child molester.
Right. You're branded as a child molester. Wow. You have no access to a computer any longer. My brother has Parkinson's disease. I mean, it's anybody's guess what's going to happen if he lives.
Sure. At this point, I think we really just have to petition, moms and girls and people who work with kids that this is not something we should be encouraging people to do as an alternative to punish someone. I mean, I don't know how that ever became acceptable, but at this point, I think we really have to come out loud against that because this isn't something that we should. This isn't a good trend, I guess.
And men have to have a voice in it too. They have to say, "I'm not going to take this anymore."
Yeah, men should be piping up here pretty quick before they wind up under the chariot wheels.
I mean, if you are going through a divorce and your wife says, "This is what I'm going to say," you have to document that kind of thing. Men can't take this. As much as women are marching and saying, you know, we need to be believed because we're women, men need to say, this cannot stand.
Yeah. Instead, I think they're kind of hiding and trying to play along with it, hoping it goes away.
And it's amazing that they're in this situation where their children are being held hostage.
Yeah.
And that's being used as a bargaining chip.
Well, in the final 30 seconds, I mean, the other thing we didn't bring up, but what a way to ruin a kid's life to encourage them to do something like that, send their dad to prison because they claimed something falsely and they know for the rest of their lives.
And now the kid's got to live with that lie for the rest of their lives.
I've written about that on my internet site, too, on my site.
I hope people go there.
It's called Malicious Mother Syndrome.
Nice. Our guest has been Chris Enns. Thank you so much. She's coming back to tell us all about Annie Oakley on a different day. We thank you very much for your input. You can find everything about her on our site, along with the archive of today's show that I hope you will share far and wide. And you've been listening to We the People. Join
Thanks
us online
on,
at
Chris.
WeThePeopleRadio.us. Thanks a million, Chris. We will talk to you soon.